New markdowns up to 70% off are at Nordstrom Rack stores now. Fresh kicks, spring tops, new dresses, there's always a score.
I mean, the denim section is unreal.
Why do I rack? All the dresses.
I always find something amazing.
Head to your Nordstrom Rack store to find can't-miss deals on all the spring things. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Matter Private Network.
On News Talk.
Since the early 1960s, my next guest has been enriching and entertaining those in the literary world with a huge body of work. James Joyce played a major influence in her life, and that inspired a new play which is currently running at the Abbey Theatre in Dublin. It looks at the life of Joyce through six of the most influential women around him. Edna O'Brien joins me now. Edna, good morning.
Good morning. Follow ye, Earth.
Now, tell me about the genesis of Joyce's women, and how many women were there?
The Joyce that wrote the great books is not identical in total with the Joyce who lived his life. So I picked, when I was asked by the Abbey Theatre to write a play called Joyce's Women, which I wished to call Kilhooly, because I thought it was a title he would prefer, the six key relevant women in Joyce's life, his psyche, his work, his everything. And they would inevitably be his mother, who was his first and in many ways deepest influence. He connected her, genuinely so, not as a hallucination, with the Virgin Mary, her kisses, and the Virgin Mary, the thought of the Virgin Mary, and the Holy Host were all one. So as you can infer from that, Joyce was a deeply, deeply religious child. When he went at Longo's at 6 and a half, or 6:30 as he called it, his letters home to his mother, some of which are in the National Library here. And it's amazing to read them with his handwriting because they're so much more tender. And he's hoping that her shins aren't getting burned by the fire and so on, and that she will make the nice pudding when he comes back, etc. He loved that mother, but when, shall we call it, the human needs of boyhood and adolescence and sexual desire and all else took over, he, because he loved her so much, he had to begin to hate her or repudiate her.
So he disavowed her simply because he had to change.
He had to change, but he knew there's two sides to every, that she would try and possess him in every way forever, if she could, and she would have. She loved him. She called him my son, Ejim.
Did he find a substitute then in Nora? I mean,
well,
she was utterly tolerant of his many ways.
Well, what he found in Nora as she sauntered into his life, as she put it, she was looking at furs in Bernardo's window, wishing for one, and this man stopped her. She thought he was a sailor because he was wearing a sailor's cap. And the boats in those days, the sailors stayed in Dublin over, you know, for days. And he stopped her. I mean, it's an extraordinary moment of fate that how he came to stop her rather than six any other woman on that street. And he wasn't given to stop. He did go to Mabbott Street and to the brothels, but that's not the same as stopping a girl in the street. And she made, with a little sauciness, she wasn't no one's fool, she made an appointment, as we will call it, that she would meet him outside number 1 Merrion Square, home of Speranza and William Wilde. They made the date. She didn't show.
So in those days, how do you contact someone that you've met briefly on the street, made an assignation.
Well, that's what I mean. It was like as if he was, well, he was driven by fate and advised, or not quite the right word, some weird secret it wasn't an impulse, because it was much deeper than that. Something in her compelled him from the first moment. And it wasn't just for a night out. It would include for a night out. There's no mistaking that. So he wrote one of those exalted, over-the-top letters to Finn's Hotel, where she worked as a chambermaid, and made another date, and she appeared the next night or the night after. And they started to go out, as it was called. They had no money. So going out...
That was the story, by the way, of his entire life.
Exactly. Well, he got money later, but he was what is known as Mr. Extravagance. So they went further and further towards the sea. And she saw him in a way as a person, you know, that he was haunted by the sea. He was talking to her about Proteus, the god of the sea. She didn't give a damn about the god of the sea or about the god that was watching over them. But what is really the mystery that nobody, neither you nor I or them, could logically explain was why this woman, who wasn't a reader, who didn't want to hear about Proteus, god of the sea, or the different sounds of different seabirds, how she entered his life, body and soul. You see, Joyce is connected so often, and sometimes ridiculously, with the what they call the smut that he wrote. Yes, he did, but life has smut as much as is her sanctity. That is the truth. Joyce put everything. So they started to go out, and he found himself more and more hysterically in love. He kept a glove of hers, and she only had one pair of gloves, under his pillow, so as that he might sleep better or dream of her.
He was enthralled. He was besotted.
But besotted can be a temporary thing. It was deeper than that. She represented from him Mother Church, whom he abnegated, Mother May, whom he repudiated, and above all, Mother Ireland, that he was at war with. Because she was the country part of Ireland.
That
was grey nettles and the mutinous Shannon waves. But she was also a woman who stood her ground.
Moving on to Lucia.
Yes.
And,
she's the crux of the play.
The crux of the play, because there is often portrayed to have been a jealousy between mother and daughter for the attentions of father.
When the children were small, she had to mind them mostly. And Lucia was then, didn't show signs of great mental disorder. When Lucia got a bit older, and when she became interested, she failed in her own eyes and perhaps in the world's eyes as a dancer. She wanted to dance, and she went to academies, which cost a great deal.
And this wasn't classic ballet. This was Isadora Duncan territory.
Exactly. Raymond Duncan, the brother of Isadora Duncan, was one of the academies she went to. They were in Paris by then. I mean, they had travelled like gypsies. They had gone from place to place to place. She failed at the dancing. She wasn't really able to make it to be one of the chosen ones in any of them. That failure was a devastation to her. But coinciding with her longing to be a dancer was this obsession with language. So she secretly, when he was out in the evening, he and Nora went out every evening of their lives, stole into his study, where she wasn't supposed to, and began to read bits of his writing and began to enter his mind through his writing. That is where the osmosis happens, which is stronger than love. So one day in my play, which did not happen in life but could have happened. She's in a sulk. She won't go for a walk. This is in Paris. She says dance is a book too. She's livid with him. She's livid with life. Her mother is jealous of her. She knows that. She also says, I hate her. I steal her lipsticks, she calls them. You go out with mother and talk about the wine and Ibsen and your hats. Everyone, Samuel Beckett crossing his legs the way you cross your legs. So she's full of bile and bitterness. And in front of him, she finally, he sees that this is a broken girl whom he has to some extent neglected. Then in the play, because there has to be some what they call poetic license, she does a little, a short dance. This is not about a dance, this play. It's about emotion, language and narrative. She does a small, she comes out of her sulk and does a little movement that's like a prelude to a dance. And as from heaven, she says one line from Anna Livia Plurabella about her winding hair. Joyce invents, because he has not written it yet, and she has never read it. She has invented it, and now he invents the next line. And they invent together 10 lines of text that they never knew they knew, if you know. Yeah. That made not just what is sometimes blithely called a bond, that made something irrevocably deep between them, because he knew that she was probably the only person, not his wife, not his admirers, not critics who loved him, and certainly not critics who hated him, and there were many. There were, I call it, let's crucify the Joyce Brigade, that she had literally, the way as if I with you now, entered, told you what you dreamt last night, and it to be the truth, you would be in shock, or you might be pleased. So she entered his psyche at the very level he needed. He never had that from Nora. And he didn't ask for it because she couldn't give it. Nora was a different person. But when that happened with Lucia, as Nora says, the play is set in a guest house in Zurich because the Joyces had to leave Paris in the war. They had no money and they were in this rather humble guest house. So I invented this guest house.
And this is on the day that Joyce dies?
This is the play is set on the day. The six women are all under the same roof in different stages of temper, distemper, terror, and many other things. After she invents the language that is his language, but it's now also hers. It's a marriage of words. It's a duet. He says to her, my little druidess, you can go into my study any time. And it's Nora who tells this story through film and flashback on stage, because the play is a little adventurous. Yeah. I'd like you and your listeners to know. It's not a straight play, A, B, C. It moves around like a mosaic. Nora sees, everyone except Joyce sees, by then in the narrative of life and in the narrative of the play, Lucia is begun not just to be a little mad, but to be very mad. Setting fire to places, going to various institutions, quarrelling with doctors, running wild into the countryside, having to be searched for, wearing a ball dress, standing on the balcony of a hotel, talking gibberish. And as Nora says in the play to Bridget, the boarding house woman, Nora says, Jim knew he played his part in the dark romance. Now, I'd like to draw attention to that word. It's not as people would like to think, or some people in life, oh, he had an incestuous relationship with his daughter. He didn't. It was much deeper than that. His daughter and him, as he said, were only a leaf away from each other's minds. It was a total nearness that is not a sexual nearness. It didn't need a sexual. He was modest for a man who has written some slightly immodest works. Nora said, Jim saw his own part in the dark romance because he had encouraged her madness, not deliberately, but called it that it wasn't mad. It was just an aberration. She was a child of Pan. You know, lovely, elaborate words explaining havoc. Ben, Nora says, and they are very grave words, for the first time he agreed with the doctors she would have to be put away forever. And Bridget says, forever. And then trouble starts.
Well, we shall pause there because we don't want to tell our listeners too much.
No.
We want them to go to the Abbey and
well,
see.
Well, that's done how many women? 1, 2, 3, 4.
We won't have time to do the other three. So people will have to go to the Abbey and discover the other three.
Yes,
for
we
themselves.
Keep that a secret.
We will.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure having you once again in our studio. Edna O'Brien, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.